Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM.
Hello and welcome to Alaska Edition. I'm your host, Zachariah Hughes, and today we are talking about how video and new media are shaping the way we get our news, whether that's viral videos about kayak eating bears or footage of alleged police brutality. Some of Alaska's biggest stories in the last year started as clips on social media. Simultaneously, more news is bubbling up from readers, listeners, and viewers themselves. It's a topic that can be equal parts irreverent and severe. And to talk about it, I am lucky to be joined by two Alaska journalists who cast very long, very esteemed shadows over newsrooms across the state. Julia O'Malley is the Atwood Chair for Journalism at the University of Alaska campus and a veteran, very decorated veteran of Alaska news and newsrooms. Welcome for being here. Thank you for being here. And Kyle Hopkins is the digital director for KTUU Channel 2 News and also a veteran of the Anchorage Daily News. Kyle, to start out with you, I just want to ask, what were some of the biggest videos and news stories that you guys saw at Channel 2 this year?
Well, the biggest videos are often different than the biggest news stories. The videos that go viral for us, a lot of times they have nothing to do with news, or they're not the kind of things that would lead a newscast. And they're almost always stuff that we did not film ourselves. They're short clips that readers, that Alaskans, gave to us, that they tagged us in a Facebook post or they emailed to us and just wanted us to see. And we're delighted to get those, and then we put them on television, we put them on the web, and that's become a big part of what we do, is just kind of looking for Alaskans to, share their lives with us, share the awesome videos that they're making with us. And in terms of like the biggest viral videos, I mean, if there's a moose doing something weird, that's probably going to be at the top of the list. A moose in the grocery store, just mundane moose things. A moose eating a pumpkin. Moose eating pumpkins.
A moose with strange toes, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. A moose with a little sleigh moose.
I'm still kind of traumatized by that video.
Moose with it's sad. It's sad. The moose has like a condition where its hooves.
Mooses with conditions.
Curl up. Yeah.
Conditional moose permits. Yeah, I'm aware.
Right. And it's the same kind of thing that at the paper when you wrote about Buzzwinkle, the moose that had Christmas lights in its antlers, that was a really big story for us. And now, but the difference is now, just, since we started doing this work, now everyone has a camera. Now everyone has is shooting footage of their lives all the time. And so more than ever, they're giving that to us, and that's doing great for us. So the top videos a lot of times are pretty silly stuff and have nothing to do with the news of the day.
Mm-hmm. And Julia, in your reporting, have you seen more, whether it's videos or photos, but just material that are coming from people outside of newsrooms, whether that's in kind of rural communities where there might not be a news bureau, or even in town with kind of citizen journalism?
One of the more fun stories I did during the Obama visit was a story for The Guardian that relied heavily on social media posts from Alaskans seeing sightings of the president. Because I'm pitching nationally and internationally, I use my social feeds, which contain a lot of Alaskans, to kind of as a barometer to see what people are reacting to. I think that one of the dangers of new traditional newsroom culture is that you get disconnected from what normal people care about or thinking about, or you get into this thing of thinking, I need to have this intellectual derp-a-derp story. But what you really want to do is just kind of know what people are interested in and serve those interests. So I think, and I teach my students that you can't think you're too smart, and you really have to value what regular people are putting on their news feeds. So I had a lot of fun sort of curating news feeds for The Guardian during Obama's visit. It was kind of cute. It was sweet that people were posting pictures of him all over the state.
I want to come back to a couple of things that you said, but Kyle, in your newsroom, are you out scouring the internet for different stuff that's trickling in, the same way a reporter might be checking in with a beat on, courts or government institutions? Or is this stuff that's all coming towards you from viewers?
Well, I mean, one thing about KTUU is it has a pretty broad audience, and we have a audience that's very strong in rural Alaska. And so we get a lot of photos and sometimes videos just sent to us by people who want to show us kind of what's going on in their backyard. And then there's a level of, and we don't see a lot of stuff from Twitter. You know, I think Alaska has not embraced Twitter the way that other places have. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe it'll happen at some point, but Alaskans they're all on Facebook, and that's where they're posting just kind of amazing things all the time. And sometimes it's them showing it to us or someone tagging us in a post that they see. Or, you know, I often, if over the years I've done a story with someone, I'm friends with them on Facebook. And so if someone in Quinnahawk, who I interviewed about, you know, how houses are deteriorating there that were built by the BIA in the 50s, you know, 2 years later, that person might catch a shark off the Western Alaska coast and post a picture of it. And so many stories come in that way, and just trying to establish, you know, relationships with people in interesting places, and just, you know, if they find something interesting, they're going to share it, and now we have that connection, and I get to see it too, and then it's just a matter of picking up the phone and being like, hey, can we talk about that shark you found?
And I just want to ask about that, because I remember when I lived in Nome, you would get stories before me about some of the communities out there, whether it was whaling activity that was happening or just kind of freak occurrences, and I didn't learn until afterwards. It's because you have one of the most coveted social media feeds of many reporters working in the state. And I just want to ask, are you really kind of scaling up that model to a newsroom level with what you're doing now?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is I just am old and have been doing it for a while now. And
Julia is nodding, so you are old.
And super old. But we, you know, I was trying to do this kind of, you know, 2007, 2008. I had a blog called The Village, and it was kind of nothing but that idea of, let's reach out to people. That's when smartphones were really taking. That's when the iPhone was kind of first beginning, you know, and get them to just share these photos with us and sometimes write stories for us that we can post. And so a lot of the relationships come from that kind of era and have been built over time. Or, you meet people you go to Ruby and you stay at someone's house for Iditarod and, you know, you just kind of keep in touch with that person. But what happened at KTUU, and when I came in the door, that was in terms of like what we were trying to do was, it went from being, oh, this is a cool thing that we should just be paying attention to and trying to share with our readers, to being, okay, this is a core thing that we are. You know, we're trying to break news. We're trying to do watchdog journalism as much as we can. We're trying to do enterprise stories. But as important as any of that stuff is, like, we're trying to just be engaged with that audience and make sure that if something happens to them that they want to share with the rest of the state, that they do, that they think of us, and that we make it clear to them that no, we want to share what's going on in your lives. Let's, you know, it's not just we're not just talking to you. We want you talking back at us.
Mm-hmm. And I want to take a minute to just show a video of Byron Nikolai, a young man from Tuksuk Bay, who started posting videos of himself singing and dancing, singing and drumming about a year ago, a little bit more. And that story was picked up by local news and then statewide. And within a year, he was performing at the White House and had an album. So I just want to show a clip of that if we can. Julia, how has the availability of footage kind of like that somebody just might post on Facebook on their own time, how has that changed news coverage in the time that you've been working on this stuff?
What I like about it is that it's really democratized kind of people's access to people's voices. You know, it used to be that journalists were sort of gatekeepers, and that journalism organizations were gatekeepers, and they decided what the public heard or saw. But what the internet has done in the last 10 years is given people like that person that we just watched, given them this ability to go from obscure to famous because of their own talent. If you make something interesting and you put it online, you have the ability to reach a lot of people because what you're doing is moving people. You know, it's like, I mean, any viral video, it's just that any viral video has that sort of element, that kernel of something that moves people, whether it makes people laugh, whether it's cute, whether it moves people to give money, whatever it is. And I think that that keeps journalism on its toes more, because we really need to be thinking, asking ourselves this question, why are we doing this? What's important about this story? Is it useful? Does it move people? If the answer to those two questions is yes, then we should go forward. But if it is no, then we need to examine kind of what we're doing.
That, I think, was a really important question, and I really want to come back to that. And before there, I want to show another video that was one of the most successful from last year, at least in our house, and what we were looking at for our metrics. And so it involves a large mammal and a seafaring vessel. So if we can, let's play a little clip of that. It was one of the most popular videos, I think, this year. Kind of down in Southeast shouting at a bear that was attacking her kayak. And I just first, Kyle, why was that such a successful video? Why did it travel so far? What's going on there that's so compelling?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if there's a formula. I think probably you can engineer a viral video, I'm sure. I think, and people have done it. That one, what we talk about in terms of the stuff that, we're not trying to find stuff that is going to go viral, because I don't think that ever works. But like the things we talk about, does it have three properties, right? Is it kind of like this only in Alaska thing? Something that you would not be able to do in any other state, right? Like, a bear outside your door, eating your kayak, kind of in a super, like in this, in this really beautiful setting. In that case, it was very much what she was saying, because that, bears are always mucking around, and there's anyone who's lived in Juneau has seen a bear probably, carrying around a trash bag or crossing the road. In that case, it was just her reaction to it. And that was also the case. There was a viral video this year of a whale pod breaching. And it's something that we've seen before, but it was the reaction. It was just like this really over-the-top reaction from the person who was viewing it. But usually the stuff that we see go crazy, it's only in Alaska. It creates some emotion. I think the stuff that is going to do great on Facebook, it makes you feel something. It makes you feel, sadness or... in this case, it was just funny. I mean, it's kind of laugh out loud funny, and that's always going to do pretty well.
I hesitate to dive into it because I don't know what happened, but the video didn't play. So, doing a deconstruction of some of the specifics. But a story like this where there's not necessarily that much news value, not that much to say beyond what happened, I'm just curious, if that's the stuff that's traveling the most, if that's doing the most robust in a lot of the arenas that we're measuring success, I mean, is that a kind of sorry, sad state of the times for journalism, or is that just some of the stuff that's making it out? And it's always been this way, and we just have new metrics for evaluating it.
Well, I would say we talk about that in our newsroom, and one thing I tell the reporters who I work with is, they're not really shooting for those stories. Although, if a moose walks into a grocery store and is eating pumpkin, eating gourds or whatever. Yeah, they're gonna make it. They're probably gonna call and get that little story. But that doesn't happen very often. And those stories, the success of those stories doesn't push out or prohibit the success of other stories. And one thing, I've toyed with the idea of kind of publishing our most read stories of the year, because I'm really proud of the list, because it's not, those stories, they do really well. They kind of rise. They get a lot of attention, a lot of people see them, but the stuff that really gets a lot of traffic is actually the newsier, kind of crunchier stuff that we cover. It's the breaking news fire coverage, the president's visit, election coverage. Those stories did as well as anything we've done. So, we're more than happy to kind of take these viral videos as they come, but the cost benefit is way out of whack. I mean, there are lots of people watch them, people like them, we're happy that they enjoy them, but how much time are we actually spending on that? Not a ton.
To think about it as like a dualism, as like news versus, fluffy internet stuff is sort of wrong. I think that as our audiences are changing, we're working across platforms. So we have a traditional platform that we're used to, and then we have all these other developing platforms that each of them has, their audiences have expectations. There's a different tone necessary to do well in that sort of arena. So, the viral videos work with a certain audience. And, the crunchy old school news stories work with another audience, but there's all this sort of overlap and interplay. And the other thing that journalists need to be asking themselves with every story that they write is, what is the culture of this place? And the answer to that is this evolving thing. And the thing about those viral videos is that the reason that they have resonance with the audience is because they're hitting on something that is about the culture of the place, very often in Alaska. And that is something that happens more here than other places. And one of the things that makes journalism here cooler than other places is that sort of evolving sense of culture and depth and interesting depth of culture here. So I really think you can't discount it. And also it informs things, like especially if you read like the social feeds of the Washington Post, that'd be like a really good example of sort of the way that the casual kind of like quirky tastes of the internet have influenced how news is packaged and how stories start to generate, you know, you start to generate stories from interesting headlines. You know, it's a kind of a different way of thinking about it. I don't think it's wrong. I actually think it's right.
I think it helps. I can tell you for certain it helps. You know, none of us are, no one in Alaska works in a huge newsroom. I mean, there's just no organization is that big. And you're going to be doing some amount, depending on the newsroom, you're going to be doing some amount of kind of breaking news. You're going to be covering a lot of mayhem. You're going to cover every murder, probably. There's going to be a story about every fatal accident. And at its worst, you just have a series of headlines that are nothing but just kind of mayhem and murder and crime and hopefully some politics, and almost kind of nothing else. And where this stuff helps, the stuff that comes from the readers and the viewers in our case, the way that it helps is it just, you know, Julie and I over the years have talked many times about the idea of what are we trying to do? One thing we're trying to do is hold a mirror up to the place, right? And just kind of reflect back what's happening in the place and what is going on in people's lives. And none of us are getting shot at every day. None of us are, you know, in the legislature. But we do, we are seeing the Northern Lights, or we're going out to look at them, or we're going sledding. And so all this other content that we're getting, and a lot of times it's not viral. It's like this kind of other level of just like, oh, that's neat. You know, here's a video of someone out sledding in the new snowfall, or just kind of enjoying, you know, like water skiing in Yakutat, something that is cool and it's unique to this place, but it's just like a little slice of life. And for me, that's really valuable. And we actually do kind of try and, you know, when there's a lot of that negative news, we try and, you know, just relieve it with some of that stuff from users.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask about some of the economics behind it, because particularly in commercial ventures, what are the pressures to make sure that you have content that fits a kind of viral mold, that can travel, that can get clicks, that can fit with the expectations of advertisers? And how do you balance that against some news that just might not be as popular?
But do advertisers even understand the value of viral content? The thing about it, and my feeling is that advertising is just catching up, you know, especially on a local level, is just catching up to sort of how the internet works. And, you know, one of the things I think about on my blog, which has still advertising and also offers sponsored content, is that I think that sponsored content is a far more provides far more value to my advertisers, but advertisers have a hard time wrapping their mind around it. They're used to like a still, you know, still square that would run in the newspaper running on a blog. But does that get a lot of clicks? No, it doesn't. However, if I were to take their product and, you know, if they were to take their product and have someone write about it in the same tone as my blog with, you know, lots of visuals that, and then that would move on social networks, that would have SEO, it would be Googleable, it could be pinned on Pinterest. So at that point, you know, it's like that is such a more interesting thing. But I would venture to say that I think that there's always pressure to get clicks, right? But is that pressure then turning into money for our organizations? I don't know that it's like, it's going slow. You know, I think our organizations are still making money for the most part, the way that they've always traditionally done it. And that would be selling ads in print and selling ads, commercial ad space on, you know, television. Mm-hmm.
And before we, I just want to touch on one topic that I think is kind of really relevant to this. And that's we've three of the very big news stories that I was tracking this year had to do with footage that came from incidents with police and alleged police brutality. And so we have a little bit of a clip, hopefully it'll play this time, of footage from the Sitka Police Department and alleged excessive force. And just a word of caution, it is a little bit upsetting to watch.
Put your hands behind your back.
I guess my question with this and with some of the other stories is, did the video make the story? And what's the role of footage like this coming out with how it ends up being covered at a state or even national level? I mean, the Kodiak case, there was just a viral thing that was going out nationally about that incident.
Like, I mean, I can tell you one thing I've learned making the transition from newspapers to a TV station. I mean, as a reporter, I kind of always have been drawn to just telling stories online because I can write my story, but I also have this platform. I can embed video throughout. It's kind of where this thing feels like it wants to go, right, in terms of the experience for the reader. But watching how decisions are made for a television broadcast for the 6 p.m. newscast is, you know, that's a video medium. It's stories are told using video, right? And so.
So is that footage, to say that something like an affidavit getting released, you know, months after the incident might have happened, that's not as compelling for some mediums as security footage like what we just saw?
Well, it's gonna make it travel on television. You know, absolutely, and it's gonna make it probably travel outside the state because other networks will pick it up. We're really focused on our audience and what can we tell our audience and what are they going to be interested in. So we're going to tell, if a story matters, we're going to try and find a way to tell it for sure. But, you know, as more and more of that footage, you know, the prison deaths is another good example. You know, there have been more headlines this week, another video released of people dying in prison. It's not something you would see much of 10 years ago or like when I started. You just didn't have a way you would write a story. You'd write what we call like a 30-inch story, and you'd describe in detail, moment by moment, what happened. And in this case, it's right there to be seen. It's playing right in your Facebook feed. And
I'm pushing back slightly. Like, I even when these deaths happened several months or a little over a year ago, in some cases, they did not receive as much coverage as now the news that the videos might come out about them will have.
Well, you also had, I think they received, you know, the paper covered the deaths, I think, each one pretty well, I felt. There were definitely, when I was looking back for stories, because you want to see, well, okay, what have we said about this before? There were stories at each point. I think the tipping point in terms of really, certainly the videos got a lot of attention, but remember, before the videos came out, or at the same time, there was the governor ordered a report that was hypercritical of the correction system. And that was on the heels of another report that was critical of the correction system. So like the context had really been dialed up. Now there's all this tension of like, there's a lot of people looking at these deaths and there's been some decisions made and some conclusions drawn. So I think, you know, would the stories have gotten as much attention without the videos? I don't know. I mean, those, maybe not, but those reports were pretty striking and were kind of big news no matter what.
But when we think about the audience of the internet, so the internet is this emotional sphere, right? And people who are looking at it are maybe not traditional news readers, or that they're developing a relationship with news that's different than people who've like traditionally got it, you know, from the newspaper or from watching the newscast. But what you're witnessing is the power of the internet because it is this emotional world. If you have an unmediated experience, so instead of being mediated through me, the reporter, you just see it for yourself, you're going to have an emotional reaction, and that's just going to be more powerful. And that's the thing that's so cool and also can go awry with the internet, is that there is nobody standing between you and this raw, immediate content.
I mean, the hard part is, say someone watches 2 minutes of that video, you know, and we see it on Facebook comments all the time. You can tell that people aren't reading the stories. Maybe they watch the video, and there's all this context. I mean, you had the union for the corrections officers yesterday saying, "Well, there's a lot more you need to know than just kind of watching 2 or 5 minutes of video." And so that definitely is the challenge: is the video can be consumed without any context, right? And so that's where we're trying. Like, it's on us to figure out how to present that. Those clips in context so that we're informing people, not just encouraging them to leap to conclusions.
And before we are really close to the end of this program, and before we dive into kind of the different, some of these different issues, I just want to ask if each of you quickly could kind of weigh in. you know, when the panic alarms get pressed about viral videos and stuff, are we seeing, you know, an end or a dualism between serious journalism and stuff that clicks well and travels well? Or is this just an expansion of the toolkit in both of your opinions?
I see it as like a kind of an ecosystem. You know, if you look like at the bombings and shootings in Paris, one of the things that was pretty amazing about that as it was unfolding, and actually my students analyzed this, is just we looked pretty soon, you saw there was, for example, there was this amazing video.
I have to wrap up. I'm so sorry. And okay. Kyle, I have no time for you. I'm very sorry. Thank you to both of my guests for joining me here, and thank you at home for joining us as well. For Alaska Edition, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.